Tarry here, where the stories never grow old, and you hear something new every time they are told and it comes clear. So tarry here, where it doesn't matter your age, and when we gather round the table, we all take the stage year after year. So tarry here, where...
Good afternoon, story listeners. That recording you heard was Tarry Here by Andy Offutt Irwin. Good afternoon and welcome to the Enlightened Radio Storytelling Hour at enlightenedradio.org, broadcasting from Bolivar, West Virginia. This is Stosh Ziolkowski, your storytelling co-host, on my own today because Fanny Crawford is away at a storytelling conference and workshop, but she will be back for next week's show. Today, our theme is voting and conflicts. Andy Offutt Irwin is very generous to let us use his recording of Tarry Here, which is an original recording and original song that he wrote. So, I think we'll start off right away with my first recollection of anything to do with a political campaign or a political event. I believe I was 7 years old, and the year was 1948, and my father was a some kind of political position in our neighborhood, and I'm not sure exactly what it was called. He had a regular job. He worked for the gas electric company in Baltimore, and putting in gas lines and checking gas lines for leaks and things. But he organized something about elections. And on this day, someone knocked on our side door, and I went to the door, opened it up, and there were three men in suits standing by the steps. And I turned, shouted over my shoulder, "Hey, Pop, the crooks are here." And those three men just loved that for some reason. I guess it's the idea of a little boy calling them crooks. And I got a scolding from my father later on. But the men genuinely enjoyed my introduction to them. Now, let's begin with a story. This is not a personal story, but this is a story that has a moral. Sometimes stories that are shared can often help in troubled times. It happened during an uneasy and dramatic time in the north of Israel. Roy was recovering from open-heart surgery. He lives in Forest Row, Sussex, but had lived some time in Galilee, Israel. Galilee is a wonderful area with much water and many flowering plants. It was there he wished to recuperate. But in this summer of 2006, recuperation was not possible. The Second Lebanon War broke out. Skies over Galilee were rent by warplanes, their deafening noise cutting the air to the threshold of pain. The nerves of the people were left raw and defenseless. During these days, when Roy celebrated with friends his recovery from the surgery in England, he was given a book of Palestinian folk tales as a present. Some of these tales he started to read out once. Later they had supper and wanted knaf for dessert. Knaf is an Arabic sweet of rose water, various soft cheeses, and sugar. This was only available in the village from the Palestinian baker. Roy was advised not to drive there, as the tension between Israelis and Palestinians was at a breaking point. But the appetite for this special sweet was not to be denied. Roy and his wife got into an old, clapped-out car and drove off to the baker's. They entered the small room where the baker and two friends were watching a television screen showing the destruction and bloodshed in Lebanon. The baker stood behind his counter, the tray of kanaf, baklava, and other sweetmeats before him. Roy and his wife were immediately recognized as Israelis. "We spot each other straight away," explained Roy. With the images and sounds from the television, as well as the planes outside, the atmosphere became even more tense. Incurable, full of rage and hate. What would happen? The situation could turn violent at any moment. Roy spoke to the baker. "Today, my friends and I are celebrating my recovery from heart surgery, and we would so love some kanaf. They gave me a book of your folk tales, and some of them I have already read. I'd like to tell you one of the stories. Would you allow me?" The man nodded, and Roy began. "Once upon a time, there was a small mouse. This mouse was delighted to find a large piece of cheese. The mouse was just about to start nibbling when another mouse appeared. 'Hey, that is my cheese. I was here before you. It belongs to me.' Now, the first mouse didn't want to give way. The two soon began to argue, to scratch, to bite, squeaking and snarling all the while." Then along came a fox. "Now then, you mice, what are you arguing about?" Both mice began to shout across each other. There was no way the cheese belonged to the other mouse. It simply couldn't be because. The fox at last got them to talk just one at a time. After hearing each mouse, he offered to make sure that justice was done. The conflict solved, and each be accorded his rightful piece of cheese. He suggested that the cheese be divided, and the mice agreed. The fox stretched out a sharp claw from his right paw and cut the cheese into two. But the two pieces were not of an equal size. "Oh," said the fox, I'll have to cut a bit off the bigger piece." This he did, and to make everything simple, he ate that bit up. But again, the two remaining pieces were not an equal size. So once more, he had to cut a bit off. And that piece he also ate up. And so it went on. The two pieces were never equal, and in the end, the fox had eaten the lot. What the mice then said or did in Roy's story, I have forgotten. But this I shall never forget. The baker looked at Roy and said, "And that is one of our tales?" "Yes." "Then I thank you for it. That is just the way it is with us. Here we argue about something, and in the end it is others who enjoy our beautiful land. America, the NGOs, and I don't know who else." Roy was given a box of kanaf and baklava as a present. The two men became friends. In the end, thought Roy, only we ordinary people left to ourselves can make peace. That is our task and our possibility. This event was the inspiration for Roy to create a storytelling for Peace Festival and also his work with Healing Words. So there we have. A story shared can often help in troubled times. And though part of our show today is going to be about voting, I cannot tell you how much people are troubled in these times now. It seems that there are lots of disagreements about policy and about personality and about party, but we're not going to discuss that it's just obvious to everyone in our country and in every part of our country. In each state, we see ads on TV and hear it on the radio about different things. And I keep looking for and listening for the ad that talks only about the person who put up the ad and what they might be able to do in government, and not about their opponent and saying all the things that the opponent has done wrong and how bad they would be. So positive stories are what we're interested in, not two sides of an argument about blaming each other. So this is the Enlightened Radio Storytelling Hour, broadcasting from Bolivar, West Virginia. And I want to give you a little bit update on the Speak Story series in Shepherdstown, West Virginia. Speak Story series is in its sixth year, and coming down to the end of the yearly programs. On November 13th, that's just 1 week from tomorrow, Megan Wells, whose home is in Illinois, will be here to perform at Shepherd University at Reynolds Hall. And it begins at 7:30 p.m. Megan has a vast repertoire of stories. She researches, writes, and performs fresh versions of old tales, edited versions of classical literature, and living embodiments of vibrant historical characters. She was recently inducted into the prestigious Circle of Excellence, the National Storytelling Network's award to honor America's best storytellers. So, if you want more information about that program, you can go online and check out www.speakstoryseries.com, all lowercase. And there you can find information and then details about Megan Wells. Coming in December, Elizabeth Ellis, the grand lady of American storytelling. Elizabeth actually was here in March. However, an uncharacteristic snowstorm canceled her performance. Also, she was to give a workshop on the next day. That was canceled also. But she has graciously consented to come back on December 11th. That's the second Tuesday in December. And she will be performing at 7:30 in Reynolds Hall. The day before, on December the 10th, Elizabeth will offer a storytelling program, a workshop for anyone who is interested. And you can get details about that at the same website, speakstoryseries.com. The workshop will be for helping people to go about telling their family stories. So if you always wanted to tell about your grandfather or your father, your mother, your grandmother, Uncle Joe, or Cousin Harry, bring your notebook, come to Elizabeth Ellis's workshop on December 10th. Well, now, in 1964, I voted in my first presidential election. I was 23 years old. Recently, when I told someone that, they couldn't believe it. They said, "You were 23 and that was the first election you voted in? Why didn't you vote earlier? Why didn't you vote in the 1960 election?" And I reminded them that in 1960, I was 19 years old, and people under the age of 21 were not allowed to vote in those days. It wasn't until early in the 70s that an amendment was passed that made it possible for 18-year-olds to vote. And I don't know if in that amendment it would say exactly why, but it was at the time when people were saying things like, if you're old enough to go into the army and die for your country, then you ought to be old enough to vote. And so in the early 70s, if you're a young person, you may not know or remember those times, but most of us of a certain age will tell you that that was the Vietnam War. And there were a lot of young people who went into the Vietnam War and lost their life, over 50,000. And some of them were 18-year-olds. So now 18-year-olds have the right to vote. My first time I voted, I cast a ballot for Lyndon Johnson. And that was because I was in college at the time after having been in the military. And one of my classmates in college actually was dating Lyndon Johnson's younger daughter. And after one particular weekend, he came back from Washington, D.C., and told us some pleasant stories about meeting with Mr. Johnson, and gave a good impression of him. Of course, he was in the White House then because of the tragedy in Dallas. So, here we go with a story about an election that I organized and arranged, which has not only tangentially does it relate to a presidential election, but in 2004, I was nearing the end of my 40-year career as a school teacher, and I was teaching at an elementary school in Frederick, Trinity School of Frederick. We did not have a very large student population, as the school had just opened in 2002 with 24 students. And in 2004, we had somewhere in the high 40s or early, or maybe 50 students, about that. Just before the elections in November, and of course it was before Thanksgiving, I came up with an idea to promote the students' learning about elections. And the headmistress at that school at that time, Mrs. Pam Seal, gave me great latitude in my teaching there because she liked my ideas. I came up with ideas that were hands-on. So at a teacher's meeting, faculty meeting, I suggested that each of the classes, each grade, should decorate and carve a pumpkin. And then when the pumpkins were all finished and they were turned into jack-o'-lanterns, that they should, the students, not the teachers, but the students, with the help of the teachers, for some of the younger ones, they should name their pumpkin, and we would set all of those pumpkins that have been carved in the lobby of the school, in the entrance lobby of the school, and display them prominently so that the students, when they were coming into the school and leaving the school or going outside for a recess or changing classes, that they could take a good look at the pumpkins. And we said all of these pumpkins were candidates for the presidency and the vice presidency, and that we would have an election. Well, we didn't actually have the election on election day. We did it a few days before, and each class came to my room. I had built a cardboard election booth where the students could go behind this booth made out of a large cardboard box and had a small table in there. And when they came into my room, and they could do this anytime during the day, the teachers had a few minutes for them to come in, they could come into my room. I would give them a ballot, and they would put their name on it, and they would also check with me and see that I crossed their name off on a ledger that we had of the entire school population, only about 50 students. But then they could take their ballot and they would go behind the voting booth and they could mark their ballot for which one of the candidates they would choose as president. We had decided that the pumpkin that got the most votes would be designated as the president, and the pumpkin with the second most votes would be the vice president. And so throughout the day, the teachers let students come to my room and vote. And one of the nice things about it was they would get their ballot, they would mark it, they would fold it, and then they would bring it to a box that sat next to my desk and had a hole in it. The box was taped. The only entrance, the only kind of way to get into that box was through this hole in the top, and they would shove their ballot there. I think the cutest thing I saw all that day was that the students in the kindergarten were so secretive about their ballot that when they finished marking their ballot, they would fold it very neatly more than twice, and then they would walk up to my desk and give me the kind of look that said, "Don't see what I'm doing," and put their ballot in a box. So at the end of the day, the headmistress counted the ballots, and one of the pumpkins was picked as the president, and one was picked as the vice president based on the number of votes. Now, to go along with this and to decide what to do with the losing pumpkins, we had decided that the winning pumpkins, the president pumpkin and vice president pumpkin, would be displayed in the lobby for a week. But the other pumpkins, the losing candidates, would be used in a science experiment. The class that I was most responsible for at the time had spent about 4 weeks working on constructing a catapult. We had an old storage trunk, had mounted wheels on that, and then the students, under my direction, but they did most of the work. The only work part I did was I used a circular saw to cut the wood to make the structure. They used the drills and things. They built the catapult on top of this trunk that was on wheels. And so we had taken it outside and practiced shooting things out of the catapult. The school actually occupied grounds next to the Keys Stadium, the Keys baseball program, a minor league team in Frederick. And so we wheeled the catapult out there, faced it in a direction of the Key Stadium, and the properties were separated by a stand of trees that were very healthy in it. And what happened then was we took the losing candidate pumpkins, and one at a time, we shot them with the catapult into the trees. And, of course, after it was over, we had to clean up a bit of a mess because the pumpkin candidates were no longer in one piece. It was so much fun. The students enjoyed it. The whole school population enjoyed it. And we even had a picture in the paper of myself and 13 students gathered around the catapult. And in the picture, you can see one of the pumpkins just after it leaves the catapult's arm and is flying through the air. And so that was a good lesson, a lot of fun, used science, and gave the students an experience of choosing a winner in a mock political event, an election. I'm embarrassed to say I do not remember which classroom had the presidential choice. So this is the Enlighten Radio Storytelling Hour at enlightenradio.org, broadcasting from Bolivar, West Virginia. And this is Stacy Olkowski, storytelling co-host, missing my friend and co-host Fanny Crawford, who is away at a storytelling conference and workshop, but she'll be back next week. And there is little laughter today because when Fanny and I are together, we don't have any problem coming up with things to laugh at. By myself, I'm just doing the program here, and we're talking about the voting and also about conflict. So, Stories in the Round is another event for a monthly storytelling program. It is held at the Unitarian Universalist Church in Hagerstown and coordinated by Fanny Crawford. And the program for the month of November is different than the normal storytelling. Fanny Crawford and yours truly, Stacy Olkowski, will be doing a play, a two-person play. The title of the play is The Guys. This play was written by Ann Nelson, and it was written just 2 weeks after the towers were taken down in 2001, just 2 weeks after 9/11. And the play is about a fire captain whose company has lost 8 men. He's been asked to do eulogies. No bodies have been found yet. And some of the families want to move on. And some of the families are still holding hope, even this long after the tragedy, that they might, their loved one might be found in an air pocket or something. But the captain is at a loss for words. He says at one point in the play, "I'm normally not a very good writer, and I'm just stuck. I don't know what I'm going to say. How can I explain this? I'm the captain, and they expect me to stand up in church and talk about the men." Well, the captain is put in touch with a woman who is a war correspondent and a writer, and she has agreed to try to help him develop the eulogies. And through a series of dialogues, she gets him to talk about his men, and there is a resolution at the end. where he does feel like he can do the eulogies. That's going to be on Monday evening, November 26th at 7 o'clock. Begins at 7. If you have any questions about that, you could call Fanny Crawford at 301-730-1638. Okay, so here we are. China is in our news a lot. And so I have found a story about China that, even though it takes place a long, long time ago, I think fits in with our world today. Once, in a time long ago, there was a king. His name was Raja Suran, and he ruled over India. But India wasn't enough for him. He wanted to be the most powerful king in the world. He made all the princes of the countries nearby bow down to him, pay him taxes of rice and gold, and call him the most powerful king. But he still wasn't happy. There was someone who refused to say that he was the most powerful, that he was the greatest king, and that was the Emperor of China. This made Raja Suran very angry, and he decided he would invade China. He gathered a huge army with soldiers from every part of his empire. The army was so big that it was impossible to count the number of soldiers. It was impossible to count the number of weapons. It was impossible to count the number of horses and elephants. But Raja Suran had a problem. You see, he wasn't exactly sure where China was. He thought that it was in the south. So he led his army into Burma and followed the coast southwards. People said that wherever the army passed, the forests were flattened, the rivers dried up, and the mountains trembled. They said it took 6 months for that army to pass by a single village. Down through Myanmar they went and into Thailand, then further south into Malaysia. They kept on marching for month after month after month until they reached the beaches of the Straits of Johor, and they looked across the water to Singapore. Of course, in those days, it was called Temasek. Here, they had to stop and build boats to ferry the army across the water. Building the boats took a long, long time, and Raja Suran became very impatient. Every day he grumbled to himself, "How long before we reach China? How long before that cocky emperor says that I am the most powerful king?" At last, the whole army was in Temasek. They marched southwards, but it didn't take long before they reached the southern sea and could go no further. Raja Suran realized that if he wanted to reach China, he would now have to travel by sea. He set his men to building hundreds of strong ships, but he still didn't know which way to go. And so he sent men off in every direction with instructions to find the way to China and find it quickly. Now, Raja Suran's journey to Temasek had not been a secret. It could not be a secret, not with so many men and horses and elephants making the ground thunder with their footsteps. Traders who sailed the coast in trading gold, spices, and aromatic wood heard of Raja Suran's plan, and they told their friends about the huge army that was looking for the way to China. Now their friends told their friends, and their friends told their friends, and their friends told their friends, until eventually someone told the Emperor of China himself. the emperor was very worried. He called his ministers together and asked their advice. "What shall we do? If Raja Saran finds the way to our land, he will surely defeat us. His army is so much bigger, so much stronger than ours. We must find a way to stop him." The emperor and his ministers sat down to think. They thought and thought and thought all day. They thought and thought and thought all night. And then, just as dawn was breaking, the chief minister burst out laughing. "Oh, yes, I have it. I have a very good plan," he cried. He whispered his plan into the emperor's ears, and the emperor smiled for the first time in days. "Yes, that is a very good plan. Go and get the things you need at once." And so the chief minister went down to the harbor to find a ship to sail to Temasek, to sail to Singapore. But he didn't look for the best ship, the fastest ship, the newest ship. Oh, no. He searched the harbor until he found the oldest ship there was. Its planks were worn. Its sails were yellow with age. The other ministers, who had not heard the plan, were very puzzled. How was this old ship going to help them? How would it stop Raja Saran's mighty army? They were even more puzzled when they heard who was going to sail on the ship and what it was going to carry. The chief minister chose the sailors himself. He chose the oldest men he could find. Some of them were so old they could hardly walk and had to be carried onto the ship. Old men sailing an old ship. The chief minister's gone crazy, the people said. Then the chief minister did something that seemed just as ridiculous. He ordered that huge fruit trees should be dug up, planted into pots, and carried on board the ship. People just wondered, what is he doing with these pots? He must have gone crazy. Lastly, he ordered that all the needles in the city, every last one, should be brought to the palace. By the next morning, the palace courtyard was filled with great piles of sewing needles. The chief minister ordered the servants to pick out all the rusty needles and put them into sacks. The servants worked hard, and by nightfall they had gathered 50 sacks full of rusty needles. One of them approached the minister. "We've gathered 50 sacks of rusty needles. Shall we throw them away?"
"Throw them away?
No, don't throw them away. Put them on board the ship." The servants did as they were told, but they were sure that the chief minister and the emperor had both lost their minds. That they must be crazy. An old ship with old sailors, old fruit trees, and old rusty needles. How was that going to save them from the terrible army of Raja Saran? The emperor and the chief minister heard what people were saying, but they did not say a word. They just smiled as they waved the ship off on its journey. A few weeks later, the ship arrived in Temasek. Raja Saran and all his men were still there, and they still didn't know the way to China. When the lookout spotted the old ship limping into the harbor with huge fruit trees growing on its deck and a crew of old grandfathers, they couldn't stop laughing. Soon everyone had heard about the strange ship, and even Raja Saran himself came to take a look.
"Where have you come from?" he said. "What country is it that has such old sailors?"
The oldest of the sailors spoke up.
We have come from China. When we set out, we were all strong and young men. We were carrying a cargo of fruit tree seeds and shiny new sewing needles. But it took us so long to get here that we have grown old. The seeds have become trees and the needles have become rusty. And he opened one of the sacks of needles to show Raja Saran. Raja Saran sighed. If China was that far away, his soldiers would be old men, too weak to fight when they got there. He would be an old man, too. He decided, no, it was not worth it. He would send his army back to India and go conquer other nearer lands. And so the huge army turned around and marched back the way it came. And China was saved. So, it seems that the emperor of China was a smart man. And he used a neat deflection to keep the Raja Saran from conquering his land. That's a wonderful story. So, more information about upcoming storytelling events. On next Saturday, November the 10th, at the Sharpsburg Library at 10 o'clock in the morning, I will be telling stories about, the topic is military STEM, but I'm not going to be talking about conventional warfare and things like that. I'm going to be using science and math examples to show whoever comes to see this program some interesting facts about submarines, designing airplanes, and using a catapult to learn something about angles. A catapult is a very old instrument of war, and can be used for many things. And there is a certain way to build the catapult so that it's most effective. If the young people who come to see this program will be given a chance to use a catapult in miniature and a larger one, and also there will be given, hopefully, some of them who come will be interested enough to want to get a pack of materials that I've put together so they can make their own catapults. And that can be fun. So that's next Saturday, November the 10th. On November the 16th, at the Victory Garden Ranch in Sharpsburg, Maryland, at 101 West Main Street, right at the center of town, there will be a Telebration, storytelling event celebrated worldwide on or about the third weekend in November. Now, this is going to be on a Friday evening at 6 o'clock. It is a free event. Of course, there will be storytelling. There will be a lineup of five storytellers. And the topic or the theme for that night, which is a free program for families, the theme for that night is games. And so each of the storytellers will be telling a story that has something to do with games. And last year we had a celebration in the town hall, and it was successful, but it was decided to move the celebration to the Victory Garden Ranch, which is a store run by a married couple who are veterans of the military, and
Duane, the husband, is also a veteran of 10 years of working as a firefighter. So, and this store is set up to support veterans. All the profits from the store goes to provide money and support for veterans in many ways. And the materials sold through the store are things that are produced by veterans. Now, moving on, we already mentioned November 26th, which is Stories in the Round and the play The Guys. But then on December 2nd, again at the Victory Garden Ranch at 3 p.m. in the afternoon, a holiday program. Holiday stories and holiday songs. Again, it's for the entire family, family friendly. And it's free. And donations would be accepted to help defray some of the costs. So there's a lot coming up in storytelling. And if you're willing to travel just a little bit further down, I guess it's, I'm not good on directions, down to Frederick, Maryland. There's a program there at the New Arts Center, which is in the old Board of Education building on Church Street. And there are storytelling. There's some play reading. There's also some music, and the that program is going strong. So you could look that up. The it's called Spire Arts, I believe, is the name of the program. And I'm sorry to say I left my note at home, which gives more details. But you could check that in the on the internet and find that. So you are listening to the Storytelling Hour being broadcast from Bolivar, West Virginia, and the Enlightened Radio Storytelling Hour at enlightenedradio.org. An interesting thing about the Enlightened Radio Storytelling Hour, we'll broadcast every Monday at noon for an hour. And then you can go online and check at talltales.enlightenradio.org. The podcast of each of our programs is up there. And if you look at that site, talltales.enlightenradio.org, there are about 2 years worth of programs that you could spend time listening to stories, stories of all kinds, all shapes. And I think you would find there are some very interesting things there. You might have to pick and choose. Maybe not every story would be to your liking, but you never know. It might be. So, our topic for today is voting. Unfortunately, we don't have any call-ins today, but because we're not really doing like a program about, we don't really want to hear why you're voting for someone or why you're not voting for someone, which seems to be the most popular thing that's going on these days. People would rather talk about what's wrong with the other candidate, and it has actually become like a sporting event that people vote for their teams, and basically there are only two teams in this contest, and people either vote all for one or all for the other, and not. They just don't take the time to see which candidate might be the best for their city, their county, their state, their region, or their country. Instead, they just vote for their team. I'm not sure, because I wasn't there, of course, when the Constitution was written and put into effect, but this has changed a great deal since I was a youngster. 50 years ago, 60 years ago, I'm sure that there were partisan programs going on, and some people always voted for one party or the other. But I do remember, as a young man and then as I got older, seeing news reports, reading about politicians who met, might be from two different parties, maybe even a third party. And they would discuss things and they would agree on something. Give and take might not be all what they wanted, but some of the things that the other side was saying sounded good, and so they made some kind of agreement, and they adjusted what they were doing as far as writing bills and things, and came to some compromises, and those compromises turned out to be better for their city or county or state or region or the country. I really don't worry about the country, because I think unless something goes really drastically wrong, eventually things will get back to some kind of place where people can agree to disagree and can do that. Unfortunately, with all the things like Twitter and Facebook and Snapchat and all this, people are posting things that are either very negative or very critical, and being critical in even in a vulgar way at times. And that doesn't ever do anybody any good. The best thing to do is to present what you think and why you think that in a positive way. Calling your opponents or the person that you're not going to vote for, calling them names and saying things about them doesn't really do any good. You can't change that anyway. I don't want to go on about this. I sound like I'm preaching, and I don't have the right to stand up at the pulpit and preach. I do not have my preacher's license. But you're listening to EnlightenRadio.org, broadcasting from Bolivar, West Virginia. And this is Stasi Olkowski, one of the co-hosts. Fanny Crawford, the other co-host, is hopefully on her way home from North Carolina from a storytelling conference and workshop. So don't forget about the Speak Story series, Shepherd University, the second Tuesday of each month. Coming up next, a week from tomorrow, Megan Wells, 7:30, start time at Reynolds Hall. And then in December, Elizabeth Ellis, that's December 11th. And Elizabeth's program in March was canceled because of snowstorm. And I did hear from Elizabeth, and I received a note from her in which she expressed some jocularity, I guess, would be a good thing, or just some laughter, that a snowstorm in March canceled her performance, but it's going to be tried again in December. So we'll have to see. December 11th will be a good date, and there may be good weather, and we'll get to hear Elizabeth, and she will be doing a workshop the day before on December 10th. And you can get details about the workshop and the cost and exactly what it's about and what you may bring at speakstoryseries.com. After December, the storytelling in Shepherdstown and in Hagerstown will kind of slow down a bit, because both of those programs run on either a 9-month or a 10-month schedule. And January and February are usually like what they would call in the theater, our dark months. They don't have a program. But they will start up again in March. In Speak Story Series, actually in February, we'll have a special program. It will be part of a fundraising and event, and it will be, maybe we'll have a special guest storyteller whose name has not been revealed yet, who will be telling stories and helping to promote the series. So, another story about voting. When I was in college, back in the early 60s, as a junior, I was a chemistry major, and I realized that the American Chemical Society had begun promoting college chapters and didn't cost anything to start a chapter, and they would provide you with a lot of information and a lot of possibilities about jobs. And so I began a chapter of the American Chemical Society at my college. There were only 22 of us in that first year. And we met monthly and discussed things in chemistry and things that were happening in different industries and that. Near the end of my junior year, another person, I was the president of the first chapter there, and another young man who was a sophomore decided that he would like to be the president, and it was suggested that we have an election. I think I would say that this was an election held in the days of innocence. This was 1965, spring of 65, and I printed up ballots, just enough ballots for to cover each of the members. And I had a key to the science building since I also worked for the chemistry department. And I passed out the ballots to people and told them that they could place them under the door of the office, in the main office in the chemistry part of the science building, and that I would collect them and give them the results. I did that. I collected those ballots, tallied them in my dorm room, listed the number of votes, and it turned out that I was elected again by one vote, and I posted the results. And to my amazement, as I'm telling the story now and then, there was not a single objection to the results of that election. And thinking about the way so much is going on today in our country, how people are so angry about some things and name-calling and everything else, it's amazing that the other 21 members, 22 members of that American Chemical Society chapter, no one questioned the fact that I collected the ballots, I tallied them in my dorm room, and then I announced the results, and I was the president. I doubt seriously that I could get away with doing that today. I think I would be questioned and probably chastised for doing it that way. Well, you've been listening to the Enlightened Radio Storytelling Hour at enlightenedradio.org, independent community radio in Bolivar, West Virginia. This is Stasha Ilkowski, one of the co-hosts, closing out this week's show. The Storytelling Hour offers listeners a window into the world of storytelling by traditional and non-traditional storytellers, encouraging our listening community to share, preserve, and expand all of our stories. Thanks for listening, and stay tuned for Jazz.